This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello and a good afternoon to you, Mike.
Well, I don't know how good it is. It's pretty dark outside.
I noticed that. I moved my car from the upper 40s to get closer.
I mean, it looks like it could snow in 10 minutes or something. It's dark.
It is.
Gloomy. I do not like November.
Holiday weekend, no less.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I was running around trying to get some things today.
Terrible.
Man, the traffic was insane.
Oh,
it still is, but it was like, what's going on here? Oh, yeah, it's the day before Thanksgiving.
I had to go to Wally World earlier today, and it was horrible.
Wally World?
Well, Walmart.
Oh. Well, welcome to Wally World. Anyway, welcome to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, and it's about just basic information about plants and gardens and landscapes, and if you have any questions, no matter what I'm talking about, interrupt me and call me at 673-4464 and ask your question. We'll have a conversation, and I will definitely help you. No bones about it. So there.
Said and done.
Okay, we're done. That's it. I've been writing about the effects of the subnormal rainfall for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was about that time I noticed young stands of Douglas fir, you know, out in Melrose and areas around that they were 10 feet tall and growing real close together. I don't think anybody planted them. They just kind of seeded themselves in there. And they're, 3 feet apart and close.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and, maybe 15 feet tall. And a lot of them were on west and south-facing slopes. And so this is becoming so, more so in the last two summers. And the lack of normal soil moisture from less winter rainfall was the deal. I was wondering, what's going on? Because they had been in the ground, like I say, maybe 10, 15 years, something mm-hmm. like that. So they did have a developed root system. But the last, not this year so much, but the previous 3 years, we had such small amounts of rain over the year. It was just like, whoa, man, what's going on with these poor trees? So, so far, this drought hasn't affected pines much or incense cedar. But for other tree species that are starting to see, we're starting to see more native trees affected by lack of the normal rainfall amounts. And as you drive around Douglas County, you get out in Melrose or out towards O.C. Brown Park, toward Glide and those areas, you start seeing this over and over. And not all, there might be 15 or 20 trees in a grouping, and about 50% of them are have brown branches and they're in the process of dying. And if you have something like that and you've got some acreage, you have something like that, it's best to get in there now. and those that are dying, just cut them out and space out the trees that are remaining so that they have a chance, because there's only so much moisture in that soil. And if you've got 15 trees in a small area competing for the soil moisture, it's a fight for their survival, and that's what they're trying to do. But if you took out 50% of those trees, there would be more. The ones that are remaining are more apt to grow and survive and actually get larger down the road there.
So there's not much you can do with the ones that are...
No. When a Douglas fir starts browning up on the limbs and all that, they're pretty much toast. Yeah.
Okay.
It's simply a
history.
A matter of time before the whole tree dies. And then as they're dying, what happens, there's bug infestations that come along, and not only do they jump on the infected or drying trees, they'll also go to the the more vigorous live trees because they've already filled up whatever they got to fill up, and they're going to something else.
Something else.
Yeah, so. Here's some more food right next door, Charlie. Let's jump on him. But and this is all because, you know, the rainfall after, like I say, after 3 years, gosh, we had half the rain that we would normally have.
And we're allegedly above normal this year so far.
Right now, so far, and I'm glad to see that. But, you know, here it is November, and we haven't had any significant rainfall. We've had some, but we haven't had one of those weeks where it just rained cats and dogs for the whole week, and the rivers were up. You know, you go across the bridge here in town, and the river looks like a summer flow, for crying out loud. Yeah. Not quite a summer flow, but a spring flow. You can still see rocks and stuff. You know that you had sufficient rain when you can't see the rocks in the South Umpqua.
There you go.
That's a good way to judge.
Good indicator.
Yeah, good indicator. So, but, you know, this drought hasn't affected pines or like incense cedar, but for other tree species, we're starting to see more native trees affected by lack of the normal rainfall amounts. And at this time, we're starting to see western cedar and Port Orford cedar dying from drought conditions on the coast, for crying out loud. And the coast normally gets a lot more rain than we do because when the storms hit, you know, they dump pretty much all of their rain right there in the coastal.
They receive the first offer.
Oh yeah, they get the first shot, boy. But you know, summer temperatures, you know, they also play a part in this whole scenario. When you get weeks and weeks of 90 plus degree heat day after day after day after day, and I think we've had, not this last summer, but the prior three, we had weeks where it was, you know, 90, 95, a couple of times 102, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just sucks all the moisture out. That's it, period.
And all she wrote.
Yeah. But if we were to get back into some form of normality.
If there is such a thing.
Yeah. But most trees have growing ranges that are determined by climatic factors. That's what it's all about, is the climatic factors. You know, when you go toward the coast, when you leave Roseburg and you're driving toward the coast, you can see a real difference in the vegetation. You know, you get to Elkton, and you're continuing in a westerly direction. And the trees somehow look a little bit healthier, a little bit more lush. You go up to Loon Lake, and it looks pretty good, you know. I mean, it's pretty nice because they get a lot more fog. Even if they're not getting rain, they're at least getting fog that sits in there most of the day, most of the winter, and it makes it
get all that good stuff.
A lot of fun to go to the coast in the winter, you know. But if our dry conditions continue, you'll just see more native vegetation being affected. And a simple test of this is to drive around Douglas County, look at stands of trees, compare them to what grows in yards in Roseburg, or take a trip, a nice easy trip east to Bend or Klamath Falls, and observe the native trees. You won't see any Douglas fir except in somebody's yard, because they're being watered and taken care of in somebody's yard. But if they're on a slope somewhere, especially something that's steep and rocky and a southerly location where the sun sits on them all day long from May to October, for crying out loud.
They don't like that.
Yeah, you got it's one of those things. And, of course, not only in the rural areas, not only do you not want to see the trees die, but it intensifies the fire danger. Because if a fire were to be started in some of those stands, that's why they go up so quickly.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's just like, boom, it's dry, and that fire takes off like a cannon, you know.
You can kind of hear them explode at night.
Exactly.
Like
the things are popping. So
and not in a good direction.
No. So one of these days, hopefully, I hope this November, we're at the end of November, we had less than normal precipitation here in November. So we got November, what's left of it. We've got all of December, January, and into February. And then it starts, the weather patterns start to change back towards more of a spring-like thing.
Yeah.
But you never know. There may be some good storms just waiting to pop in.
Not for a while.
Well, probably not. You're looking at your sheet there.
Yeah. The updated forecast.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
It's going to be cold, though.
Yeah, it is cold out there right now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's foggier than it looks like winter or something out there.
Imagine that.
I don't know, man. I can't believe it. Those trees are going to, hopefully, some of them will. We'll make a comeback, those that have a deeper root system or are a little bit larger and more mature. But I'm also seeing some very large trees with, 2 and 3 feet in diameter. You can spot them and they're browning on top. And even though mm-hmm. they've been there, say, 100 years or 150 years, they're still suffering from that kind of weather pattern.
Are they goners, too? I mean, will they eventually all die?
Well, not all of them. I mean, but the ones that are browning
brown,
up.
That's what
yeah,
I meant.
Yeah, just they're on the way out. Mm. Because a good indicator is, hey, if it's all green, it's growing, it looks good, it looks healthy, it's going to live for the most part, unless some bugs attack it. Of course, there's borers that love to get into green trees and suck all the sap out and kill them that way, but... No, normally. And the North Umpqua, I haven't been up there too much this year, but a few times I've been up looking at some landscapes, and it's pretty good up there. Mm. You get up above Glide about 5 or 6 miles, where it's really a lot of forest and everything else. It's looking good because it stays cooler there. It doesn't get as much heat simply because the trees keep the heat to a minimum,
mm-hmm.
and it's shady on the soil. So consequently, the soil moisture lasts longer simply because of the shade that the trees make. So,
right, and the river is up there
and
too.
And the river is up there too. But even though there's a lot of them that are, like I say, totally dead, they're not totally dead, but they are weakened by the drought. Mm. And what will save our native conifers, like I say, is a very wet 4 months yet to arrive. I'm hoping we get. I know some people go, I don't want all that rain. Well. You live in a beautiful place, and it's beautiful because of the weather, because of the climate, and because of the rain. And the rivers are running beautifully right now because they had sufficient moisture up in the higher elevations that all the little streams running down to them keep it going. I was out at Winchester Dam here about an hour ago, and, there's a good amount of water coming down the North Umpqua, but it's not November flow.
Yeah.
A November flow would be a lot higher and faster and a little bit browner because of the erosion and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got your hand on the button?
Yeah, we got a break.
Okay, we'll be back. Any questions? Get them up here. 673-4464.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, we're back with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. And Mike, where were you 60 years ago on
I think I was in Vietnam, but I'm not sure.
Vietnam?
60 years ago. I don't know. I don't recall now. How many years ago was I was there in 1967? That's not 60.
Oh, this would have been 63.
Oh, okay.
Probably close, though.
Yeah, I know. I was. I don't know what I was doing.
You got to remember the day, though.
I'd have to sit down and figure it out with a calendar.
Calculus.
Yeah. But, you know, I've been talking about drought and what's happening to our native vegetation. But it's also happening in yards around Roseburg and Winston and Sutherland and anywhere I go. It's not real defined in the neighborhoods, but you can see a little bit of it happening. But thankfully, most of these yards that it might be happening is, like I say, it's very minimal. But I'm sure they're getting some water from the homeowners and stuff, because there's planting beds and there's lawns and there's all that are being watered. So consequently, the tree depends on the size of the tree too. If it's some huge old thing, 3 foot in diameter, it's got a massive root system. So it's got to suck up a lot of water to maintain itself and its growth.
Right.
And that's, whoo, boy.
Suck it up, boy.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, here's what I find really interesting are the large rainstorms hitting the East Coast and parts of the South. I mean, it seems like they're getting hammered. And hammered, and, you know, Florida all the way up into New York and Alabama, Georgia, all that stuff. Even my daughter in Texas. I got a daughter that lives about 25 miles south of Austin, Texas. And they're getting more rain than Oregon.
Oh,
and
man.
And they're kind of a
desert type.
Yeah, they're semi-arid. I mean, there's no fir trees down there, but a lot of juniper trees. And sagebrush and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's not just pure desert, but it's on the verge of pure desert. And she called last night or the night before, and we're talking. And the first question I asked is, "How's your weather?" Oh, she says it's been raining for a week. Raining for a week. I said, "Why don't you send some of that this way?" And she says, "Oh boy, it's been coming down, you know." And
wow.
It's just.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of storms coming up out of the Gulf there, Gulf of Mexico.
But not too many on our coast.
No, not too many on our coast for some reason. I don't know. But she's enjoying it, I guess. So they get more rain than Oregon. Great, okay.
Makes her feel like she's back home again.
Yeah, right. You're back home again, except it ain't.
No.
It ain't. But at any rate, we still have many trees and shrubs that are drought tolerant. In other words, they can take the dry condition, and they can thrive in our climate and our landscapes. And that's I just led up to this simply because, you know, what's happening in the natural world. You know, tree-wise, there are many available trees that are hardy and are able to withstand prolonged dry periods. And remember that a newly planted tree or a shrub, how many times have I said this over the last 20 years, needs water the first year for a good start. And I don't mean every day. I mean like once a week, good deep soaking. And then when the second year rolls around, maybe once a month, and the third year, you just ignore it. It's okay. It's on the way unless it looks shabby or look droopy, then you give it some water. But... you know, that first summer that you plant a new tree, you got to say a beautiful maple tree for shade and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore it, but you don't want to overwater it. And I've preached on overwatering 100 times, at least maybe 500 times. People are tired of hearing me say it, I know.
Just a friendly reminder.
But you remember what I said, yeah. That's why we don't ask you about it anymore. Oh, gosh. But a good soaking, like I say, once a month on some trees. I had trees in my first little house here in Roseburg I've told the story before. I found them up at the dump, and that's when it was not the, what do we call it nowadays?
The
landfill.
Landfill, okay. Or something.
Well, back in those days, it was the dump. And you drove up this gravel road, and there was a gully there, and you backed up, and you to the logs, and you just dumped the stuff over the logs, and there was nobody to take any money from you or anything like that. It was free.
And it was OSHA approved.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm sure it was. And one day, it was probably the first part of May, the first week or so in May, and I go up there with a load of stuff, and I look down, and I saw two bare root flowering cherries laying down in the dump that somebody just threw away. And I thought, I can't believe it. And they looked vibrant. I mean, there were no leaves on them or anything like that.
Right.
It might have been like April. And so I walked down into the dump.
Uh-oh.
And I looked at them, and they had buds, no leaves, but buds on the ends. And I scratched the bark, and the bark was green. So I picked them up, and I put them in my truck, and I took them home and planted them.
And nobody said anything.
Oh, there was nobody there to say anything. There was no guards at the dump back in them days. You could just dump. But I took them home to my little old house there in Roseburg, and the soil was like, pure clay, adobe soil. So I dug a great big old hole, and I filled it up with, nice potting mix of bark mulch and some topsoil, and mixed it up real good. And I stuck them in there. I stuck both of them in there, and I thought, well, they're still green. And I used my miracle Liquinox start, the vitamin B1 that I always talk about.
The Snickers bar.
I really dosed them with that real strong. The directions say 2 tablespoons per gallon. Yeah. I put about 6 tablespoons per gallon. I wanted to make sure they got it. And I did that maybe once every 10 days. And they sat there. Nothing is happening. Oh. Then one day, as we got into May or so, end of April, May, all of a sudden I see these buds on that tree. Those trees are starting to swell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's good. And then within another week, there were leaves on those trees. And I thought, ha-ha, that's great. And those trees are still alive today. And this is 40 years ago, for crying
out loud. Whoa, mama.
And they're huge. They're 35 feet tall. They're Kwanson flowering cherries. Have beautiful, beautiful pink flowers in the spring. And the new owners just left them, and I'm glad they did. And they're gorgeous. They're beautiful. And it's because of B1. Vitamin B1. That's the thing. You see, it's hard to kill a tree. And I'm amazed when people say, I bought some bare root trees from you, and I watered them and this and this and this. And I said, well, how often did you water them? Oh, every day. I said, well, that's what killed them. They rotted the roots. I said, just don't water them anymore. Leave them in the ground and see what happens. And then come back a month later and say, hey, that tree that I thought was dead, it's alive. It's got leaves on it, and I haven't watered them. I says, good, keep it up. You're doing a great job.
Number five is alive.
The root system has finally
kicked in
and says, wow, I don't have to swim. It's good. But there are a lot of trees that we have here in our area, different nurseries and stuff, that are pretty much drought tolerant. And once they're established, you don't have to continue the watering thing. But a lot of folks in their landscape still have trees in their lawn, and their lawn will have a sprinkler system. And they plant, they dig a hole in the lawn, plant the tree, but it doesn't succeed because the lawn is being watered, and that's too much water.
Right.
And so when people used to come into the nursery, I would ask them questions. Well, where are you going to plant the tree? Oh, we're going to put it in our lawn or on the edge of the lawn or something like that. And how is your lawn watered? Well, we have a sprinkler system comes on every other day or something like that. Mm-hmm. I said, well, before you plant this tree, why don't you build a mound? Build about a 2-foot-tall mound by about 4 feet around, and plant the tree in the center of that mound. That way it won't be sitting in water when you're watering the lawn so much, and it'll do okay. And every time somebody does that, it works. It works, period.
Nice.
Because it's getting moisture that runs through the nice soil mix.
Yep.
And and it doesn't have to get into that heavy clay that's beneath it right away, and then over time it will. And it'll once it lasts a year, once it grows 2 years, it's pretty much on its way unless a bug attacks it or
you know.
Spray it with Roundup or some other cool thing.
Yeah.
And that's what you do with shrubs. That's what you do with trees. If you have a water problem, this year we don't have those water problems because it hasn't been raining. But in normal years, we've had water problems simply because we had, 35 inches of rain. Or
64 flood.
Yeah, 64 flood. Jeez Louise, yeah. And a 64 flood, the nursery I used to own was totally underwater.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they lost a lot of stuff in that flood.
Oh, no.
And then there's a nursery right next to the river that really got hammered.
Oh.
So it's good.
Is it still around or is it gone?
Oh, it's still around. They rebuilt too as well. And but just remember, newly planted materials, trees, shrubs, and all that kind of stuff, needs some water the first year for a good start. And like I said earlier, a good soaking like once a month will get them through that first summer. Shallow-rooted plants like perennials, rhododendrons, and azaleas are going to need more frequent watering, but not as much, of course, because they're surface rooters. Their roots are right under the soil. If you try to dig up a rhody, you'll find the roots are an inch below the soil, or maybe 2 inches below the soil.
Wow.
So that's why you should mulch if you got rhodies, azaleas, those kinds of things. That's why you should mulch them heavy so that root system is protected from the heat and the drought. And that bark mulch keeps that moisture in for a long, long time. It's amazing what that does. Hmm. You got your hand on the trigger there?
Well, yep, we got another break.
Okay, we'll be back. 673-4464. If you have a question, I will be glad to answer it.
Got him trained. All I have to do is point.
I'm like a puppy.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, if somebody attacks me, the daddy bear is going to come out.
Right? That's right, and don't forget it.
Oh, we got a show to do here, Mike.
Oh, okay. Well, you mean we can't say stuff like that?
No.
Are we still on the air, or they cut us off?
I think, yeah, everything looks good.
Anyway, I'm talking about drought-resistant trees and drought-resistant shrubs and things like that. And, you got to keep your eye on the weather. You got to keep your eye on, how much rain do we actually get. And when you're thinking of trees, it's, what's a drought-tolerant tree? Well, most pine trees grow with little care after a year. They're pretty substantial. They're pretty hardy. And if you have a large lot, not your average neighborhood lot, but a fairly good-sized lot, a pine tree makes a nice statement. A ponderosa pine, a Scotch pine. There are so many different varieties you can choose from. They're all pretty, and they're all hardy. And if you watered them once when you planted them and never watered them again, they'd still make it. They'd still live.
Oh, is that right?
That's what I like about them. When they plant clear cuts with pines and firs and do a mixture of them, you can tell who's the winner there. The pines are doing okay and the firs are struggling, especially, and I'm talking about a south slope, steep, rocky, bad soil. Mm-hmm. The pines outgrow the Doug fir 3-1. Easy. So, but there are so many pines you can choose from. I mean, ponderosas are, one of our state trees. But there's just so many varieties that are pretty, that are beautiful. They make a nice statement, and they're really, really tough. And like I say, if you have a large lot, it's you can put something like that on there. But don't plant it anywhere near a structure, for crying out loud, Give it at least 50 feet of space if you can. And there are some dwarf types that being closer to a structure or like a fence house and a neighbor's house. Yeah, then that's what I see.
Right next to your neighbor.
Yeah, right next to you. I've seen that, and and I'm sure sometimes the neighbor goes, "Why did that guy ever plant that stupid tree right next to the fence?" You know, but you get the picture.
That's part of my dad coming out in me.
And the same, is true for any really large growing tree. Always when you're buying trees, get as much information on the rate of growth, the ultimate size that it can get, how wide will the branch structure, like if it's a shade tree, will it be so wide that it stretches 50 feet, maybe 20 feet into your neighbor's yard or 10 feet in your neighbor's yard and your neighbor's not really liking it because it drops leaves in his yard, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, yes.
Be cognizant of, the ultimate size and plant it accordingly, so you can enjoy it and your neighbors don't want to kill it. But that's the same thing. With any large growing tree, always do your research, ask your questions, find out. You got the internet or you got those computer thingies. Go ahead, look it up and see how large it's going to be. See what kind of conditions it needs. Now cedars are tough trees, and there's all kinds of cedars, and they can withstand fairly dry soil for a short time. And I'm referring to cedars that are grown for landscaping purposes. I'm not talking about incense cedar so much or Port Orford cedar. I like them all. But number one I'm talking about is the Deodora cedar. It's a fairly fast grower and can get 50 plus feet at maturity, which might take, 50 years, but it can get there. And they're super hardy. I've planted them on my hillsides and have never watered them except when I planted them, and they look great 30 years later. I mean, they're 35, 40 feet tall. They're looking healthy. They're in full sun, but that's how tough they are. Mm. And they make a good yard tree if you have the space. And space, I mean, a yard, say you have a backyard that's 75 feet wide and 50 feet deep or something like that, you've got room if you've got no other trees there to contend with. Mm-hmm. And don't plant it near the house.
Or build a building right next to it.
Yeah, or next to your workshop where occasional limb might break off due to snowmageddon and come through the roof while you're working on something.
Chicken coop or what have you.
Yeah. Then there's the blue Atlas cedar is a very unique tree.
Is it blue?
Yeah, it's the needles are blue.
Wow.
Definite blue.
Hmm.
And it'll grow and give your yard a very classic look. It's not like your normal looking Deodora cedar. It's in the same family, but the needles are short. The tree branches are very spaced out. And it looks very exotic. Mm. And again, this is a tree that doesn't need a lot of care. Once these cedars get rooted in after the first year or two, you don't have to do anything to them. Except admire them and put your picnic table underneath them.
Decorate
or something like
them at holidays.
Yeah. And they'll come in, with blue needles, and some of them come with green needles. And They like I say, they have very short needles, and they
are
grow.
They sharp? I mean, can they poke you?
Well, not really.
Oh, okay.
No, they're short. They're maybe an inch long, something like that.
So they're not too dangerous.
No. You wouldn't want to take your shirt off and run into one, but that might scratch you up a little bit. But and then there is a weeping variety that grows wide but not very tall. It might get 6 or 7 feet tall, but the arching branches, they can spread 20 feet in all directions over, say 20 plus years. But they can be pruned. You can shape them and prune them. I've got one on the corner, not on the corner of my house, but I've got a planter off the corner of my porch. I planted a weeping blue Atlas cedar there. And as it was growing and it was, starting at toward the porch, I just cut it back and thinned it out, and it's, got kind of almost a bonsai look, and I keep it that way. And the trunk is probably now 6 inches in diameter, and the tree, it might be 5 feet tall and 7-8 feet around wide, you know, the branches,
yeah,
the end of the branches.
Wow, that's...
And then my neighbor down the road saw it one day, and he raises cows and stuff, and he's a cowboy, but he says, "Hey, Mike, how do I get one of them trees?" I said, "Well, Albert, you got to take care of it, you know, you got to do this thing." He says, "Oh, I'll do that." And he says, "You know that big old pile of soil I got down there next to the road by my barn?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "Could you plant me one in there?" I says, "Sure, I'll do that for you." And it was, you know, one-man job. Of course, I was younger, but, you know, I could lift it and dig the hole. And it was, you know, really good soil because it was a mixture of what he cleaned out of his stalls plus soil. And
yeah,
it was already mixed together, and it grew the best weeds in the whole world. But I put one in there, and that puppy now is probably from end to end maybe 20 feet spread. And it's only about maybe 7 feet tall, but the branches come up and they arch and they bend over.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they call it a weeping blue atlas cedar. And he's never pruned it. And I say, "Hey, you want me to prune that thing some days?" "No, I like it the way it is, looking good." It is. And he never waters it, never fertilizes
it. That sounds like the Albert I know.
Yeah. Albert Mason is
his
name.
Yes.
You know him?
I do.
Well, he's my neighbor.
All right.
He's one of my neighbors.
Had a good summer with him back in the 70s.
Oh,
him,
yeah?
Him and his family. Yeah.
Well, he's a great neighbor. He really, truly
he's
is.
He's a great guy.
And
yeah,
and he raises cows like nobody's business.
Does he?
Yeah. And he rents pasture from that ranch that's out toward the road, out toward the highway. And I guess he trades or rents or whatever, but he has most of his cows in there, and then he's got a corral that I have to go by every day to get to my place, and he's got these little half-grown cows in there. I says, "Albert, what are you doing with them?" "I'll take them to the auction." Oh man, now then I start feeling sorry for those little cows. Why don't you take one of the big old fat old ones out there?
Let the little ones be.
Yeah, let the little ones grow, Albert. But I was talking about trees, not cows, actually.
Oh, or your neighbor.
Or my neighbor. I'm sorry. I got way off there. But his weeping blue atlas is absolutely gorgeous, and it is definitely a focal point. And usually they need little care. Well, in Albert's tree gets no care. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And they're very drought tolerant. And it's a very decorative tree and very drought tolerant. So you got the best of both worlds that work for that. And there's a lot of other decorative small trees that can need nothing, like I say, after a year in the ground. There's dwarf spruces, dwarf firs, dwarf pines, weeping pines, weeping spruces, weeping, you know, I mean, there's just so many, there are literally hundreds of varieties of different types of conifers that will fit in your yard without, you know, becoming a nuisance, you know, 10 years down the road if you plant them in the right place.
Right,
you don't plant them up against the house or against the driveway or something like that. Then you say, "Oh man, that tree's growing on my driveway." Well, you should have pruned it, or you should have
planted it somewhere else.
Planted it back about 20 feet, you know. But you know, my number one decorative tree, of course, is any Japanese maple. And they can be like an upright grower, one that grows, you know, up 15, 20 feet, or the shorter variety that's the weeping variety. They'll get maybe 5 feet, maybe 6 feet in 20 years. But it the spread on the branches might be 7, 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually the there's a green variety, a green leafed variety, and then there's the red leafed variety, and there's other varieties in between. There's so many varieties of Japanese maple, I can't even keep up with them. And I got a book about Japanese maples that the author that I met years and years ago, J.D. Vertrees, he wrote the book. And
literally.
And it's a big hardback book, and he gave it to me as a present.
Nice.
When I was just starting in my landscaping business, I had heard about him, and I thought, well, I got to go find this guy and see what his Japanese maples look like.
Yeah.
And he had little tiny bonsais, and he had these great big things. Some of his Japanese maples were 30 feet tall.
Good heavens.
Yeah, you know, different varieties. I think there's 150 varieties or something like that. I'm not quite sure. I'm not positive on that. There could be more. I'd have to do my research again. So you got your hand on the trigger?
Yeah, it's that time again.
Okay, we'll be back. 673-4464 if you have a question.
All right, call down. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, reminiscing about the 70s. What a decade that was.
I know. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? I don't remember how far back was that, you know?
50 years?
Oh, gosh. I can't believe that. I'm not that old, am I?
No, neither am I.
I'm talking about drought trees. That's what I'm talking about. And I just got onto the Japanese maples, and they can be, like I said, the upright types that'll get up, 10, 15, 20 feet, depending on the variety, or the shorter weeping type that are so decorative that everybody loves and wants to put in their yard. And they're just tougher and all get out. Most folks think of them as delicate and they need a lot of care. Not true. Trust me, not true. They don't need a lot of care. I've got them growing out on my hillsides with no care at all. I mean, that's how they are. That's how good they are. And we got a call?
We do.
Oh, we'll call. Let's get them.
Hey there, you're on the air with Mike.
Okay, can I change the subject?
Sure.
I've been listening to you talk about drought trees. Anyway, I have a couple of questions. One is, should I fertilize my lawn now for the winter?
Well, you could, but it probably won't receive the fertilizer until the temperature it gets a little warmer. You could, but do it lightly. But in February, that's when you really should hit it, because almost December now.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
And another question I have is about crabgrass.
Yeah.
Now, I was looking it up and said you can do it in the fall or the spring, but they kind of recommended the spring. What do you recommend?
Probably the spring when it's warm.
So how do you do it?
Read the directions.
You mean Dynamo or Roundup?
Well, Roundup will work. Is it spotty through your lawn or what? Or is it the whole lawn?
It's more than just spotty. It's doing quite well.
Okay. Well, if do you want to have a lawn there?
Yes, I do. No, I was just kidding.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. You got to kill the whole thing then, because if you leave one piece, and you're going to have to spray it probably at least twice, maybe three times to make sure it doesn't grow back. And then when it's all good and dead, you till up that ground and you plant a new lawn.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite up to tilling it up and redoing it. I just want to kind of revitalize it if I can.
Yeah, well, you can revitalize it, but it's going to be tedious to make sure.
Okay, I can handle that.
Okay, if you can handle tedious, you'll have success. But Roundup will work very well, and it won't poison the ground, and it's safe. And it's good.
But are there some other things that you can use that just kill the crabgrass, or is it?
Well, you just want to spray it directly on the crabgrass. Don't be real selective on your spraying, and just it's going to be a long, tedious process. But you'll see it be right now. Like I said, it would be a waste of time and money and effort.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we break into February, say, and we got some nice, sunny, warm days, usually we have about a week or so, you could do your first spraying then.
And then just reseed it.
Yeah.
In that area?
Yeah, yeah. When it's totally dead, you could kind of take a hoe and hoe the dead part out, and then reseed all the bare spots.
Uh-huh. So they sell killer just for crabgrass. Do you think Roundup's any better than that? Because I use lots of Roundup.
Well, I don't know. I know that Roundup works. I know that I've used it for 60 years, and I know that it works. And as a landscape contractor all those years, that's what I did when I came upon a troublesome lawn.
Okay. So if I just am diligent at the beginning of the spring and okay.
Yep. And it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. It's not going to be a quick thing for you. Okay. So you'll have to have patience.
Yeah, well, I'm better at patience than running the rototiller. I can never get the darn thing started. So
we'll hire somebody to do it for you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you for the info.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thank you for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty.
Now, well, let's see. We're getting
about a 2 minutes.
Okay, I was starting to talk about Japanese maples and the upright varieties and the weeping varieties and all that. And like I say, most folks think of them as delicate and needing a lot of care. But like I said, it's not true. They come in so many leaf colors, shades of green and red and burgundies. And this is definitely a tree that makes a statement. It won't give you a lot of shade, but folks think that they are fragile and they need lots of care and water, etc. Not true.
They're not pansies.
They're not pansies. They are tough. I've grown them on my hillsides with no care, and they're beautiful, except when the deer browse them a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, sure. Those darn deer.
Yeah, they're crazy, man. And then they just start hopping around in circles. But like I say, on my hillsides with no care and full sun, and, you know, the first year in the ground, I'd give them some water every couple of weeks. But I have many that are also in my bonsai collection in tiny, shallow pots to stunt their growth. And a little water in the summer is all they need. Just a very tiny, tiny bit. And they survive and they do well. So do your homework. Do your research. Ask questions and get some good answers from some people that actually know what they're talking about. I know that's hard some days.
Yes, I was thinking that.
But, you know, it'll work.
All right. You have a good turkey day, Mike.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there, and thanks for listening.
All right. The afternoon report is next with Douglas County's news team.